There are a lot of great, neat things that we can do in spring here in Wisconsin and in the UP. Eric Hansen of Milwaukee is our guest next. He's a well-traveled outdoors writer, an avid hiker. He's written extensively for Backpacker magazine and other outdoor journals. Been on this program a number of times. He's the author of Hiking Wisconsin and of Hiking Michigan's Upper Peninsula, both published by Falcon Globe Pequot Press. We're pleased to have him join us today to talk about things that you and I can do in springtime outside in Wisconsin and maybe in the Upper Peninsula as well. If you have some questions or maybe you've got some ideas of your own about what's great to do at this time of the year or as spring approaches and in spring, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, you can reach us at 263-1890. Eric Hansen with us by phone. Eric, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here.
You know, this is really, we're getting into that peak time of the year for really a few things. One of them, waterfalls.
Oh, this is true, Larry. I mean, it's just a fantastic time when the water flow is at peak. And I mean, if you look in your neighborhood creek and you notice the high water and you just notice the high temperatures we've had the last couple of days, the waterfalls up north are going into their peak flow and we'll be there for the next couple of weeks. And it's just an incredible show.
Yeah. And a place like Manitou Falls.
Right, south of Superior, Big Manitou Falls, 170 feet tall. I've heard it described as the fourth tallest east of the Mississippi.
It's a beautiful, beautiful falls. And if you really want to see it kind of at its best, so to speak, this might be the best time to go.
This is true. And besides Big Manitou Falls, a couple other of my favorites as you swing east in Wisconsin would be Morgan Falls, south of Ashland and west of Mellon, and also Potato River Falls, east of Mellon, is a beautiful one. You swing over to the UP, and there's a couple of outstanding choices in the far western UP. One's the Black River, and there's a half dozen waterfalls within a few miles that just tumble into Lake Superior. East of there, there's the Presque Isle, which is in the far west end of the Porcupine Mountains Wilderness State Park. And it's a very large river with three thumping waterfalls and virgin forest lining it on each side.
Oh, you're making me want to get up and head out.
Yeah. It's a great time to be out. You know, and it's a great time to be up north. There's just so much changing with the southerly flow we've had. I mean, there's a lot of birds just moving into the state. The sandhill cranes are coming. And, of course, the sandhill cranes are the oldest living bird on the planet. They've got fossils out in Nebraska that are, I believe, 7 million years old. And the bird hasn't changed one iota in all that time. Back in the 30s and Leopold's day, we were down to about, I think, a dozen mating pairs in Wisconsin. And now we're up around 12,000. It's one of our really nice success stories.
They're wonderful to see and hear.
Right. I mean, that bugle is just, it's straight out of the dinosaurs. You know, you get this, I don't know about you, but I just love hearing that bugle. And then in a little while, as they start to pair up, you can see them doing their mating dance, you know, when they're jumping up and down off the ground and flapping their wings and all that.
Well, and just as long as we're on the topic of birds, I've been seeing here in the Madison area some bald eagles.
Uh-huh. Another incredible story, and thanks to Rachel Carlson for warning us and cautioning us about DDT, but we have got, last spring, 2,000 bald eagles choosing to raise their young in Wisconsin, and that's 10 times what we used to have. But we're seeing eagles all up and down the Wisconsin River, the Mississippi, the Namekagon, the North. Also, a nest in Horicon, and last year, just north of Milwaukee, we had a pair nesting along the Milwaukee River in Mequon. So it's almost becoming commonplace, but it's also a really vivid reminder of what we're capable of with a few minor adjustments, you know, that we can improve things both for them and us.
And one more bird that I'll mention is, and, you know, it wasn't long ago that we'd get calls on the program and somebody would say, do we have any pelicans in Wisconsin? I saw some, I thought, were pelicans.
Right. Yeah, up by La Crosse in the summer in Green Bay and closer to where I call home, Horicon. That's been the big story lately. And I talked to Brenda Hill this morning, the wildlife biologist, and she tells me there's a firm count of 760 last year active nests. So you can double that figure for the actual bodies of birds, about 1,500 plus about 1,000 white pelicans that are non-breeders. And if you've ever seen pelicans fly, you know it's a knockout. They are like synchronized swimmers. They pivot in perfect formation. Just a very elegant bird. And Brenda, by the way, who's the wildlife biologist at Horicon, welcomes phone calls from citizens. She's at 920-485-3007. And she also mentioned that she saw the first robin this morning.
Ah, 980-485-3007.
Right.
Is
920-485-3007. And that's Brenda Hill, and she's the wildlife biologist at Horicon.
Oh, great. Eric Hansen, our guest today, we're talking about best spring outings in Wisconsin and the UP, things that you can do in the out-of-doors, see and experience. You want to join in with your own questions or comments or your own favorite for this time of year in spring, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. We'll be glad to get you on the line. You know, switching gears just a little bit, or quite a bit, this is the best time of the year to spot river otters.
You're ahead of me, Larry. I wanted to go there, and I'm trying to roll out what's happening this week and the next month. And late winter on top of the ice is one of the best times of the year to spot river otters, just because of the visuals, because you've got that dark brown body against a white background. And as winter gets longer, they're more and more on top of the ice. And so we've got them all across the state. We've got 13,000 river otters in Wisconsin. Certainly, they're all over the north, but one of the really nice success stories is that in the Kettle Moraine waters and Horicon and other places around Milwaukee, we've got river otters today. You can look for their scat, or you can look for, if there's mud, their tracks. And they've got a very distinctive track, or it's kind of webbing in between the fingers and the thumb, if you will, is kind of splayed out to the side. And on snow, every once in a while, you'll see what the biologists call dot, 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 dash. And that's where they take three running bounds, and then they belly flop on the snow or the ice. And sometimes that skidding belly flop goes for 10 or 20 feet, depending on snow conditions. And it's a regular stroke. They'll travel miles and miles that way. And it's just like rollerblading for them. And if you've ever seen them do this, I guarantee you'll be grinning. It's just hilarious to watch.
Okay. Well, what do you think about beach walks this time of year?
That's a great choice. I mean, truth is we've got a healthy snowpack in some parts of the state that just melted in the last couple days, and some things can be pretty muddy. And one of the ways we avoid muck is by going to the central sand counties. Black River State Forest has a wonderful set of trails along the Wildcat Mound and the Ridge cross-country ski trails that also serve as great hiking trails. And it's sandy soil, you know, so mud is at an absolute minimum there. Another favorite for me is Point Beach State Forest on the eastern side of the lake, just a little bit north of Two Rivers and Manitowoc. And there, there's 6 miles of state-owned shoreline, beautiful beach, and not an ounce of mud to be seen. And one other strategy is to be right on top of the moraine. For example, the Ice Age Trail in the northern Kettle Moraine State Forest, from Butler Lake up to Parnell, the trail is right smack on the top of the ridge. It drains very well, and it's going to be one of the first dry spots around.
We got an email from a listener, and this is, I think, one that I was going to answer. Well, why not you answer this one? Why do some rivers in this state flow north for existence? For instance, the Fox, which flows north, while everything else seems to be moving in a southerly direction?
I've got theories. I wasn't able to get a hold of somebody that could give me absolute truth on this. But a couple of things I think are relevant. I mean, if we look at the northern end of the state and if we look at the UP, there's a rather steep escarpment dropping into Lake Superior, and the rivers tend to be short and steep and have a lot of waterfalls. And the Lake Superior drainage doesn't extend that far south of the lake. And most of our large streams, larger rivers in Wisconsin, I mean the Chippewa, the Flambeau, the Wisconsin, the Wolf, flow south. Now, looking at the Fox River, you know, I just noticed that the Wolf flows south into Lake Winnebago and then takes a turn north and becomes the Fox. And I'm not 100% sure about that turn. I mean, part of that might be the escarpment on the east side of Lake Winnebago. It's that Niagara limestone that comes down from Door County. And another explanation partly might be some of the end moraines. But I guess if I look at the overall Fox, I would describe the northern headwaters of it as flowing south and then swinging north at the last end of it. And if Drew Hansen of the Ice Age Trail or other knowledgeable geologists are out there, let's get them on the phone, hey?
Get them on the phone, 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Well, talk a bit more about what are some of your favorite spring hikes for wildlife.
I'm a big favorite of tundra swans. So a couple of years ago, Ann and I were over by Trempealeau and Perot north of La Crosse, and it was a snowy Easter. And then one evening, the winds switched to the south, and up the river came wave after wave of tundra swans. And they don't stay long in the spring. In the fall, they usually come to the river and they stay for a month or so. And very interestingly, they come south from the Arctic, from the tundra, and then they make a turn pretty much over us, over southern Wisconsin, and they head to the Chesapeake for their winter days. And in the spring, you know, in a couple of weeks, they'll start coming this way again over by La Crosse. They may stay for a day or two, but it's nowhere near the month-long stay that's typical in the fall, you know, when you can just see thousands and thousands of them on the river. But to hear them, they've got this melodious voice.
Yeah.
To look out from the cliffs at Perot and to see them just sweeping up the valley, you feel like you can feel the planet turning almost and tilting, and you're just like, this has been going on forever and ever. And it's just one of these moments, one of these touchstones, and you're like, this is something to put on the calendar for next year. Another something else that happens a little bit further out, more or less a month from now, is the sturgeon spawning in the Wolf River. And we've got a planetary superlative in Lake Winnebago. That is Earth's largest population of natural river spawning sturgeon on the planet. And that superlative used to belong to others, but they messed up. And basically our conservation ethic here preserved that. And I think anybody who's seen the sturgeon rolling.
It's wonderful, isn't it? Well, we're going to talk some more about this, Eric. We need to take a quick break for a look at the news, and we'll take some calls. Gene from Oshkosh Online, and what about you? Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the best spring outings in Wisconsin and the UP today with Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, a well-traveled outdoor writer. He is the author of Hiking Wisconsin and Hiking Michigan's UP. It's published, both of them, by Falcon Globe Pequot Press. Pleased to have him along, and certainly you can join in, too, with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Gene from Oshkosh has been waiting a long time. Gene, thanks for waiting.
Thanks for the program. Hi, how you doing, Eric?
All right, how are you?
Great. One of my favorite things to do this time of year is to go free diving or snorkeling. If one has a fairly good wetsuit, and you can get into the water before the algae blooms, the clarity is incredible. a lot of us will either go spearfishing for rough fish or just enjoy the scenery and see the bass and the northern and panfish, and it's really incredible before the algae blooms.
Gene, are you talking about in the river or?
No, in various lakes that are around the area.
Okay.
Clear lakes, also Lake Michigan provides obviously very good water clarity. But the there's some lakes that the visibility is between 20 and 30 feet before the algae blooms.
Yeah.
And when would the algae bloom, Gene?
Algae starts blooming in May.
Okay.
So it's, you know, April, through the month of April and probably early May, and then the algae starts kicking in.
Yeah. And it's really, and you know, if you're an ice fisherman, you can really tell this. You look down the holes and you can see a long way compared to what you can see in the summer months. That's
right,
for sure.
Right, right.
Okay.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate it. Karen in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm just great.
I think I know Karen. Yeah.
I'm calling to see if you could let us know how long there might be snowshoeable snow up in the UP Trap Hills area, and when would you make the transition to hiking?
That's an excellent question, and I got to tell you, as somebody who's a big fan of the Lake Superior Snowbelt in the UP, and somebody whose favorite activity long about this time is spring skiing and snow camping, it's changing. I mean, it used to be mid-April the snow would disappear. And I can remember doing ski trips, four-day ski trips in Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore 10 years ago during the first week of May. And now, I mean, what used to happen once in a blue moon or once every 10 years, the snowpack is going to the ground often by April 1st in the snowbelt. So, I mean, I'm seeing on the various maps I'm scanning that in the Keweenaw and between Grand Marais and Munising and Pictured Rock, and in the western UP up in the high country like the Trap Hills, maybe we've got 18 inches this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much longer it's going to last. I mean, late next week I'm seeing a pretty large warm front move in, and I think it's going to be an early transition. You know, I think, again, we're going to have the snowpack go to the ground April 1st, which used to be cause for comment, and now it's almost to be expected.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Karen.
Thanks a lot for calling. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 with your own questions or comments. This is a pretty great time. I don't know if you I can't remember if you mentioned it or not, but to walk the top of the moraine segments of the Ice Age Trail.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just it's the first part of the woods to dry out. And very often the trail is just right on the top. And I know that section that I mentioned in the northern Kettle Moraine, going north from Butler Lake to Parnell Tower, as you walk north, there's a series of vernal ponds or damp spots both to the left and the right of the trail. And there's this chorus of peeper frogs that comes up, you know, as the nights warm up. And it's just a glorious walk. It's 99% wooded. The sounds of spring are drifting up from the ponds, the frogs and everything. And you just can't go wrong. It's just a good place to be.
What about events? Any events coming up this spring for to get outdoors for?
In Minneapolis, big outdoor fair. I think it's usually about April 20th at Midwest Mountaineering. It's the Minneapolis kind of equivalent of Canucopia, you know, which we just had in Madison.
Yeah.
National Trails Day is in early June. I believe it's along about June 6th. And if you punch that into Google, I'm sure that'll show up. If you punch Midwest Mountaineering in Minneapolis into Google, I'm sure you'll get to their webpage and get the date of their outdoor fair, which is a very broad spectrum of activities of hiking and paddling and climbing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you mentioned Canucopia, and I had that on my mind because we were there, and over the weekend, and it's a wonderful way to get you thinking about spring and getting out, doesn't it?
A Canucopia is incredible. I mean, 20,000 attendees, and I wasn't there this weekend. I had to be elsewhere. I was there last year. The crowds are huge. There's maybe six presentation rooms simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And I just remember last year and the other time I was there, I mean, they give me a room with, I don't know, 250 chairs, and the walls fill, the floors fill. And, you know, you're looking out, and there's an honest count of 350 bodies, and you're like, this is the silent sports army. You know, this is... you just get this feeling of how many people are into our outdoor scene here in the Upper Great Lakes.
It was almost impossible to find a parking spot in that huge parking lot.
Right, right, yeah.
Mark in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
Hello. Hey, I was listening to you. I'm from Minnesota, and a great trip I've taken my son and my wife up to is the Apostle Islands up around Bayfield.
Uh-huh.
And I do a lot of fishing up there, but the sea caves and then to go out on the islands, it's just a short little boat ride.
Absolutely, yeah.
And hiking on the islands is just phenomenal.
It is. It is. And for myself, my favorite trail there is the Lakeshore Trail on the mainland over towards Cornucopia. It starts by Myers Beach, and you're walking east, and you're kind of like wondering, what was the trail crew? What were they thinking when they laid out this trail? Because you notice this huge lake, and you're 50 yards inland, and every once in a while you catch a glimpse of it. Then you get long about the two-mile marker, it's like the bottle rockets start going off. There's this incredible canyon opens up at your feet. And arches and overhangs and just the sandstone landscape art. And you're just like, okay, I'm glad I came, you know. But for 2 miles, you're kind of like going a head scratch. You're going, what were they thinking? But when you get there, you're just blown away by the scenery. And of course, Lake Superior is the backdrop for all this.
Yeah. I'll be in Bayfield, middle of May. I'll be in the middle Friday of May. We'll be up there.
Uh-huh.
And doing a program from up there, and I'm looking forward to that as well. Great place, great area. Diane in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Hi, Diane.
Hello. I'm just really excited to hear about all the so many positives of the return of wildlife from our conservation efforts in Wisconsin and the UP. And, in fact, I was really surprised to hear that we had otters on the Milwaukee River. I wasn't aware of that. And that we've had eagles nesting so close. And I just wondered, are there any kind of conservation concerns that we should be paying attention to or that we could get involved in to continue this, you know, thriving wildlife that's returning to our environment? It just sounds really exciting to me, and I wondered if there's some way that, you know, some things that we can do to continue this and ensure that it continues.
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think we are riding a wave of Wisconsin's conservation consciousness right now. The 2,000 eagles we have, 13,000 river otters, 12,000 sandhill cranes, a couple hundred timber wolves. I mean, this is pretty much the legacy we've gotten, you know, from past work, and we have a debt to many, many people. I mean, Aldo Leopold and Rachel Carlson. You know, but there are some new threats, and I think there's things that we need to pay attention to. In Wisconsin, we had an almost 30-year-long citizens campaign to stop sulfide mining, and sulfide mining is a form of mining, a process that breaks open sulfide in the rocks, and very risky, very heightened risk of water pollution. If you've ever seen pictures of rivers running orange, that's sulfide mining. And we did that, and we passed what, in effect, is a moratorium that says, show us a mine such as this that's been closed for 10 years and active for 10 years, and there's been no issue. Unfortunately, I need to report that the mining industry has our region. They have plans for us. And in Minnesota, there's a proposal for a sulfide mine. And even closer, in Upper Peninsula, there's proposals for sulfide mines, one on the Yellow Dog Plains and one almost directly under the Menominee River and the Wisconsin border. And I just think we need to pay attention. This is not a time for us to be asleep at the switch. If people want more information on those situations in the UP, you can go to www.savethewildup.com or also www.northwoodswild.org. These are proposals that will impact us, and just because we passed a moratorium here doesn't mean that the water from these mines won't be flowing this way. And I just urge everybody who believes that our Northland is our spiritual homeland to pay attention. Now's the time to do something about these proposals.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I wasn't aware that the mining issue is near Wisconsin, I mean, not near Milwaukee, as well as northern Wisconsin and in the UP as well.
Well, the new proposals are in the UP and Minnesota. But the deposits, you know, pretty much go across the region. And the mining industry is definitely interested. And for them, you know, the proposals have to do with sulfide mining, which means that there's all this water being used for their processing. And I think there's almost nothing more sacred to people in this region than the pure waters of our North Country. And that's a discussion we need to have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And as a matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier, you got a National Writing Award from the Chicago Tribune for an essay on that I think had to do with the sulfide mining to some extent.
Yeah, and I mean, actually, it wasn't the Tribune that gave me the award. The Outdoor Writers Association of America gave me a first place award for 05 for 2005 conservation writing, and that went for an essay that the Chicago Tribune ran about UP sulfide mining and the Coaster Brook Trout. And the Coaster Brook Trout, by the way, is a salmon trout. It's like a steelhead. Those are brookies that run to the lake and come back big, you know. And in the U.S., outside of remote Isle Royale, we have only one population left where they used to catch them by the barrel all the way across the south shore of Lake Superior. And that one population is the Salmon Trout River in the UP. And guess where Kennecott wants to put a sulfide mine? Directly over that stream. And there's just no way those fish are going to stand for the slightest little oops, the slightest little belch of pollution, and they're going to be gone. Most people that know anything about fish and trout realize that brook trout are a real indicator species. And, for example, if you're trying to assess the health of a forest, if the brook trout, the native brook trout, are in the creek, the forest is doing well because they just have a relatively low tolerance for silt and sand and that kind of thing. So the brook trout of the coaster brook trout of the UP is truly an iconic fish. You know, it's very symbolic of what the region is. It's big, pure water. Brook trout migrating from this pristine stream into the big lake and back again. And it's an epic story of our region. And results are pending.
Yeah.
Let me just put it that way. Results are pending. We'll see what happens.
Well, now, Eric, as you're thinking ahead here for the next several weeks, what are your plans for trips that you're going to be taking?
Well, I need to go to Marquette this weekend for a conference. And so Sunday, I got to be back down on Tuesday, but Sunday night I'll be skiing into Pictured Rocks. There's a trip I often do, and part of it is to watch otters on Beaver Lake, which is just in from the shore. And part of it's just to experience the quiet of the Lake Superior shore there. And I would hope to return a week later to do a several-night spring skiing trip. But frankly, I'm really concerned about the warm weather coming in. I'm not sure that might end the ski season up there. But that's kind of a spring ritual for me. I just love the firmness of the spring snow, being able to ski wherever you know, my curiosity leads instead of having to be on a packed trail. After that, I mean, there's a lot of paddling that comes to mind, and certainly got to go to Horicon with my friend Scott and do the trip to see the pelicans. It's one of the just incredible stories around here, and they're just so beautiful. And it reminds me that things are ever-changing. They weren't there 10 years ago, and they just kind of moved back in. I'd also hope to get over to the river, the big river, the Mississippi, to see some of the migrations there and to catch the tundra swans. The sturgeon and the wolf are in the Peshtigo or the Oconto. Saw them last spring, and I was just totally addicted. It's like, got to stop and see them. And that's, you know, when the water temperature goes into the mid-50s, and that's more or less a month off, mid-April, mid to late April. Boy, how much farther you want me to roll?
You're gonna be a really busy guy here.
Well, these are brothers, Larry. It doesn't all happen, but you know it's good to have these mental lists in your mind and on your calendar to remind you of what's out there.
Yeah, you bet.
And turtle flambeau flowage, which you might have done in your muskie fishing.
That's a favorite spot for me. I love the flowage.
Yeah, we were there a couple years ago in early June. And, boy, it's just like this huge stage with, like, birds coming in from stage left and stage right. And it's got the largest concentration of nesting eagles, ospreys, and loons in Wisconsin. I think it's a dozen pair each of ospreys and eagles and maybe 20 pairs of loons. And when you're there in early, June or Memorial Day, I mean, the eagles and the ospreys are making these almost never-ending trips to the nest, you know, kind of like waiters at a big banquet. And the loon chicks are on the mother's back riding around. And that's another favorite trip.
It is. Alice in Minocqua, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Alice.
Good afternoon.
Morning. How are you doing? It's afternoon.
Just wonderful. I would like to ask your guest what he knows about the hawk migration across Lake Superior and when that occurs.
I'm thinking a little bit towards mid-April, and I'm flipping through a reference, and the spots that I hear about are both Duluth and the far end of the Keweenaw and in the eastern end of the UP. It's Whitefish Point. Duluth has got Hawk Ridge, and yeah, it's just an incredibly famous spot for hawks and eagles as they round the lake if they choose not to cross the water. The other spot is in the Keweenaw, you know, for those brave birds that say, yeah, we're going to jump across the big puddle up on Brockway Mountain. And then, you know, you can also be looking down on the birds just from the heights. And in the east, you know, it's Whitefish Point that they're talking about. And usually, you know, the reports I'm hearing is more like late April, early May, you know, depending on how the winds are flowing. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of like three spots on the south shore of Lake Superior, like west, central, and east. And,
super.
Yeah.
Thanks,
great show.
Alice. Yeah, thanks, Alice. Jim in Luck, Wisconsin. We'll go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I want to ask Eric. I love to see some of these places he's talking about. And I have, but every time I get in my truck, I feel guilty because of global warming. What do I do about that?
First of all, it's important to conserve fuel. I also think it's very good for us to remind ourselves what we have to lose. You know, and here in this region, and I mean, we're fortunate to live amid our planet's greatest collection of fresh water, which is no small thing. We're fortunate enough to live, the Boundary Waters, for example, holds the only enduring wolf population in the lower 48, and they have dispersed out throughout our region. The eagles that we mentioned earlier, I mean, we've got 2,000 bald eagles choosing to raise their young in Wisconsin in the spring. And it's really good for us to remind ourselves of all that. But I also think we need to remind ourselves that we have addressed huge challenges before. We've adjusted our use of DDT, and we stopped. Here in Wisconsin, we had an incredible citizens' campaign against sulfide mining, and we won. And reminding ourselves of these success stories just reminds us that, yeah, we can deal with global warming. I think the people get it. I think the American people are ready to roll up their sleeves and get off oil and do what needs doing. I'm not sure about the politicians in Washington. You know, I'm not sure they've figured an easy way out of this yet, but I think a lot of the American people, every year, more and more people get it and just say, yeah, we're going to have to address this. You know, oil's not going to go on forever. Let's figure it out. You know, let's do solar. Let's do wind. But, you know, it's going to be the incredible discussion of our age. And I don't think it's a technical discussion. I think it's a moral and spiritual discussion because we literally could lose it all. And these things that we have known, these incredible, wonderful experiences, we want them there for our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah.
Eric?
Yes.
Yeah, anything else?
Yes. Might people help the environment by trying to explore places that are closer to their home?
Absolutely. You know, I myself think the more we know the neighborhood, the more our curiosity is renewed. And I think maybe perhaps if I've got a role in this is just to remind people of what's nearby, to remind people to stop, you know, for 5 minutes in the middle of their commute home, perhaps to check the bird migration. Or if you're in Milwaukee, you know, the fantastic things that we've got to see in our lakefront. I've got a little bit of trouble with the abstractness about Utah or Alaska. And believe me, I know Utah very, very well. But I just think that a lot of this starts nearby. And I think we've got an incredible region here, and we've got an incredible state.
And we should enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Eric, it's always a pleasure. Thank you,
Larry.
Thank you so much. Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, author of Hiking Michigan's UP and Hiking Wisconsin, our guest today. Always great. He's got so much enthusiasm for the outdoors and for conservation. It's uplifting to hear him speak, and we will have him back again. I can promise you that. There's a new book about broadcasting, radio broadcasting. It's called Something in the Air, and we'll be interviewing the author of that book tomorrow. And then we'll talk fishing with Gary Engberg, Mazamani Guide. Stay with us.